Comics. Comics. Welcome to ORP, otherwise known as Omen Revelations Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Nunley.
And I'm your co-host, Steve Sellers. On ORP, we like to talk about geek stuff, pop culture, including movies and TV series, as well as comic books and comic characters. But that's not all, is it, Mike?
No, it's not, Steve. We're also writers for Omen Comics and Revelation Comics. So we like to talk about both writing and our comics. So podcast and chill with us. This is our second Creator Spotlight episode here on ORP, and today we have fellow Wicked Crew member Scott Kish, the creator and writer on the Wrath comic book series, which just got its third issue fully funded on Kickstarter recently. We also have 2D artist Drew Smith with us here today. She is the concept and cover artist and the production assistant on Wrath. We're glad to have you both with us on the show today. Why don't you say hi?
Hey, everyone. Good to be here. Scott, writer, creator.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm Drew.
All right. So we're going to get into the story here in just a minute, but I have to ask a question about the credits on the comic. I couldn't help but notice that there is no editor listed, but I noticed that Drew has editing listed on her, that you have editing listed on your site there as for hire skills. Do you do the editing, Scott, or Drew, was that part of your production assistance?
So, editing the script, I help Scott with. The script process is kind of a back and forth. He will, write it out. I'll just kind of read over it, give him some general, feedback and, hey, this read a little weird to me, just this outside perspective, and then he usually will go back, and then once the script is finalized, I'm responsible for going through and formatting it for the artist, since I have a bit of an insider knowledge into just kind of how things will flow panel-wise, so that it gets kind of like a raw script that's more of a, more of almost like a screenwriting style of script, and then I get it formatted into pages and such.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that seems like a unique creative process there. How did you guys come up with that?
I guess it was I didn't have a lot of foresight into how many panels per page or where exactly the page breaks go, and so I just write it by panel and I just go start to finish, however many panels it takes me to get the story I want. For one chapter on the page, and then Drew, who actually went to school for some of this animation and storyboarding, has a little bit more insight on where are these panels going to land on the page the best, and then she puts that into the script, and then we hand that over to Emilio, and then he can basically look at that and be like, okay, and he works his angle on it.
My next question is actually for you, Drew. You're listed as the concept designer on Wrath. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about that process and what went into it?
Yeah, so I mainly do a lot of the character designs for this because the setting is pretty, urban, rural, suburban America, kind of inspired. We don't really need to have a lot of concepts for the environments and such, but Scott has a lot of, ideas for the characters, and some of the characters are more involved. We need to make sure that they're, they have very specific features that need to be included, whereas some of the characters are a little bit more vague and I get to have a little bit more just creative freedom with them. My responsibility there is just, you know, mostly character design, a little bit of creature design, obviously, since it's about a creature, and just kind of general advice for, you know, whenever we hand the script off to Emilio, saying, you know, like, this is this character, this is what this needs to look like. You know, that sort of thing. So that's the kind of concepting I do. And sometimes those concepts are just sketches. You know, that's all that really needs to be done to get across the idea for Emilio, or some are like full, you know, full color turnaround sort of style.
Now, Scott, you have a couple of different artists that you're working with. Drew, who's here with us, and please forgive me if I'm mispronouncing this. Her name is Emu Utrera, is that correct?
His name is Emmy. He goes by Emmy, but it's Emilio Utrema is his full name.
So apologies for misinterpreting that.
No problem, and I had trouble with that last name too. took a couple practice tries.
Okay, understandable. I was just going to ask, can you describe how you work with each of your artists and how those dynamics have worked out for the book? Have there been any surprises that you didn't expect in the finished art as opposed to when you wrote the script?
So Drew was the first artist I worked with fully on the project. Matt from Wicked did a very initial creature concept for me when I first started out. But once Drew started working with me, she was the first artist, so that was pretty straightforward. Once she was on board, Emilio is a little bit tricky. A lot of people don't know the dynamic there. He's actually from Argentina, and he primarily speaks Spanish. So we actually communicate through his artwork and just simple direction that we run through like Google Translate. The keyword is simple there, so a lot doesn't get lost in translation. To kind of give an example of how much visual is involved, I forgot to, because usually when he sends me page work, you know, I'll take it on my phone and I'll highlight certain sections to show him what I'm talking about. One time I forgot those attachments, and he tried his best, but he was working on, you know, incorrect panels and other things, and I profusely apologized for wasting his time, because that was on me, because I forgot to include the full instructions, and basically told him, like, if I send this to you again without those visual attachments, please let me know so I can get those to you. But we make it work, and it's been working well, I think.
I can totally understand that. I have a similar relationship with our artists as well, so I can totally understand the back and forth with attachments. But I'll just to go a little bit forward with this, this is probably more a question for Drew, but if you have any thoughts on this as well, Scott, I'd be curious to hear from you as well. I'm a big believer in the idea that a good cover should tell the story, and Rats covers absolutely do. They're excellent. But there's one thing that entrances me about the covers on Wrath. It seems like the covers draw quite a bit on white and positive space, like almost as an outlining effect. And the covers use shapes to convey different meanings to the image, depending on how you're trying to look at it. In many ways, it's like looking at a cloud or an ink block pest. You see different things in the cover, depending on how you look at it and what perspective you're seeing it from. What was your thought process behind the creation of these covers?
So there were actually some original covers from when we first started, that, you know, I put together that weren't this style, but, when we decided that we wanted to, when we moved on to the second chapter, I had an idea. We were talking about, how the first chapter covers weren't bad, but I just felt like, you know, there was something we could do to push them even further. So, I sat down and like pulled a bunch of reference from different kind of inspiration sources, and then just from my own kind of artistic preferences, I really love playing with positive and negative space in my art. So I kind of had this idea of a mixture between kind of this older movie poster kind of style where you used to have like really graphic elements that would stick out, but then combining that with, you know, the card more character focused on a white background that you see in some kind of modern manga covers, and then bringing in a further kind of element of like, when you look at something one way, you see something, but then there's also something else. You know, it's not just, nothing in the cover is just fully one thing. So I actually did the chapter 2 cover first, and I did a sketch for it, and I pitched it to Scott, and I was like, hey, I have this idea for the cover, and I have an idea. I could go back and make a new cover for chapter 1, and then we could use this kind of same style for each of the covers moving forward. And he was like, yes, this is awesome. So that's sort of how we went with it. So I try really hard when I'm designing the covers for them to give you an idea of what's going to happen in the chapter when you have no clue what the chapter is about. And then after you're done reading the chapter, you go back and look at the cover and you notice some things that it's like, oh, this was actually a reference to this, even though it initially could have been read as a reference to this other thing. And so that's kind of what I've been going for, especially with the chapter 3 cover.
Oh, that's really interesting. I've noticed that you mentioned movie posters, but I've noticed they do that a lot in like even on album covers where you'll see that they'll put little things in there that talk about each song, but you don't really notice it until after you watch the album. I think it's a really cool idea. Mm-hmm. There are a few ways that violence is typically shown. There's what I call technical violence that you would see in, say, like a martial arts film. There's gory violence, where it is often shown in its full and graphic nature. And last but not least, there's what I call Hitchcock or psycho violence, where the violence is more implied rather than shown outright, which is where you seem to fall with it. You show just enough to get the cinema of the mind working. Basically, all the really gory parts end up taking place in our minds rather than on the page. My question is this. Was this an intentional style choice, or was it a concern about what might be appropriate or inappropriate for some readers?
Honestly, a little of both. I've always kind of liked that implied effect. Where I'm telling more than showing, and I do that also with some of the more graphic and sensitive subjects that I address in there, like the domestic violence aspect, particularly something that I wanted to show and was very much a part of what's driving Doug internally. But I didn't want to get too much into it and get into a more like glorified or, graphic nature that might not be appropriate for most.
That's interesting, and it certainly does do that. I mean, you seem to do it well, particularly when you're talking about like with the domestic violence scenes. You seem to show just enough that it's almost like the reader can then apply their own experience to that, to what takes place after, almost, you know. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, and that's a lot of what I was going for. I'm still kind of new at this, but if I'm getting an emotional response when I'm writing it, I kind of feel like I'm on the right track.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So in the world of Wrath Comics, some parts are black and white and some are in color. I got an impression from reading the comics that I'd actually like to bounce off of you. It's like the black and white portions are a facade, and the color portions are what's real. Like there's this normal kid on the outside, but the real Doug is this Wrath creature under the surface. Like when you talked about the Ikiryo, it seems to fit with the story itself. I mean, am I picking up what you're putting down there?
A little bit. What I wanted, one of the big things when I found out I could do this is what I wanted the black and white more to portray is just the mundane world, like the everyday, you know, 9-to-5 kind of world. Nothing really special, nothing really great. And when we add that color to the creature, it makes it seem like it doesn't belong. It brings it to life on the page, like this is something terrible, great, and unnatural.
Yeah. Speaking of the curio, I'm actually curious about how you learned about this bit of folklore. I know some things about Japanese mythology, but this is the first time I've actually run across the curio. It's a fascinating idea. And for those interested out there listening, yes, there really is a Wikipedia entry on this, so research it at your leisure. So my question is this. How did you learn about the curio, and what kind of research was involved in the way you've both depicted it?
So the curio isn't exactly what is happening with Doug. It was, as I was kind of researching this, I was looking into astral projection, because that's the closest thing I could think of to what Doug is doing. So I started looking into all the different things. That's where the imagery of the sword and the sheath comes from. But I found that legend and I was like, that's actually really kind of close to what Doug's doing, only it's more on Doug end is more intentional. Like he has a more direct control of it. And I thought it was really cool that there was some folklore that was already out there that matched what, or was very similar to what I was, processing in my head. So I put it in the story since I found it as part of that research.
Oh, that's really amazing. It's really interesting that you came about it almost from the roundabout route, but you got to the same place, which I find really, really fascinating. But I will say there's the other side of Wrath as well, which is I've noticed that there's a grounded level of realism in Wrath, even with these mystical elements and the paranormal elements like the curio and the astral projection. But if you put these kinds of things aside, Doug seems like he could be any normal kid you might find. He deals with things that many kids now probably struggle with. His world feels solid and anchored in believability, and I think that the tone and the sense of realism honestly are amongst Wrath's strongest points that I've seen. Was this something you intended from the beginning, or did it naturally flow from your own writing process?
A little bit of both. Doug, as the character, I just wanted him to be, you know, just average kid, you know, like someone that anyone can relate to. I felt that was important to the story process, especially with, you know, the subject matter I was dealing with is how relatable is he? And, you know, is it going to hit with the people that are feeling this way?
Wow. I can tell you that I can certainly relate with it. And that actually leads into my next question. This is a somewhat personal question for you, Scott. And it'll take me a minute to set up, so bear with me. As someone who has struggled with anger issues from my past, I feel like I can relate to Doug's character dealing with the rage inside of him from his past. The rage, or rather the wrath inside, is like someone else living inside of us. The person we become when this wrath is triggered seems to act very differently than who we are normally. It's almost like we get triggered by an event or a phrase mirroring our own experience and our buried emotions about that event in our past, and it kind of takes on a persona of its own, often attacking whoever caused this trigger as if they were the original source of the pain. While we are angry, we don't really see what we're reacting to until we've calmed down and had a chance to really examine what just happened, like Doug did with Nicole. At the beginning of issue number one, Doug says, "I'm telling this story in the hopes that it will help if it happens to someone else. None of the names I will be using are real, to protect myself and others involved." Now, as a fan, I'm wondering how much of that opening statement is you talking to the reader. While this is obviously fiction and an entertaining one at that, does this reflect things about your own struggles, like how Stephen King wrote The Shining's Jack Torrance character as an alcoholic as a reflection of his own struggles with alcoholism? I don't mean you have to get super personal here. I'm just looking for a glimpse.
Like the best thing I can answer is I do put a little bit of myself in the Doug character. Anger is one of the reasons I picked it was because of its, you know, volatile nature, like you pointed out, like it's something that can just completely take over sometimes. And it's that raw, heated emotion that can literally pull us in directions we don't normally want to go. And so that's why, you know, I've had my moments and, you know, like that, you know, moment where someone does something that just completely sets you off and you're just shaking with the anger afterwards. And you're just like, why am I like this? Like, why is this bothering me so much? And yeah, I try to channel that into there. And I do get a little bit grumpy and growly sometimes, especially with my diabetes and my blood sugar getting low. Mm. So, you know, a little bit of all that rolls into it.
Yeah, and I really have kind of noticed that, like, all of our characters are aspects of ourselves in some way, so I can totally understand that. But I was going to take a little bit of a distance from that. And one of the things I really love most about the second issue is just how Doug's story sounds so unbelievable and insane that even his best friend refuses to believe any of it first. That whole approach is really amazing to me. We know it's real because we're following the story through Doug's perspective. But at the same time, Nicole's reaction is so genuine, and it pairs perfectly with that realistic tone that you've set in the early issues. How much are you trying to make the reader doubt what they're seeing on the page, and at least in those issues?
A lot of that, and this is kind of where we go back to Drew's input and editorial, is a lot of times when I'm trying to get a different perspective, especially when it comes to Nicole, I'll bounce a lot of ideas and get a lot of feedback from Drew on that. So a lot of that kind of comes from conversations we had and just wanting to have fun with it and just show how much of a bond and relationship that Nicole and Doug have, that she's, you know, willing to humor him, but kind of bust his balls a little bit about it.
Yeah, that close relationship really, really comes across in there. I mean, you really feel the connection there between them. In issue three, I gotta say, issue three is pretty exciting. The series is really kicking into gear with this issue. I know recommendations usually come at the end, but screw it. Issue three is totally my favorite so far. For those of you that are listening to this, go read Wrath issue number 1 and 2 and keep your eye out for number 3 when it comes out on Global Comics and the Wicked Store, because you're not going to want to miss this one. Now, I don't want to give away any spoilers about the issue. I want to say anything that you want to keep hidden. So could you share with us a little bit about issue number 3?
Sure. Issue number 3 is what we've been kind of building up to from the first two issues. We've kind of established that they know that Doug has his power. He's taken it out for a test drive and found he's got some measure of control on it. But then something kind of pops up at the end of 2 that leaves them with a lot of questions. And it kind of starts taking them into this collision course with something that's been going on behind the scenes the whole time. Doug finds out that he's got a lot more on his plate than he even imagined was out there. And it's something that we've hinted at. There's going to be some opposition that Doug's going to go up against, and the readers are finally going to get to see that in chapter 3.
I think that's definitely going to be rewarding once they get there. Issue 3 definitely raises the stakes for Doug and Nicole, and I think the readers should be excited about what they'll find there. Now, we see a learning curve as Doug tries to understand the Akirio and how the power works. It feels natural and gradual as Doug and Nicole experiment with what Doug can do. How did you think out that learning curve? And to the extent you can talk about it, how does the opposition of three play into that process?
I don't think I'm familiar with the opposition of three. Could you maybe go over
that? I was thinking of a particular character that shows up. You probably know.
Okay, gotcha. Basically, I kind of put myself into the situation. Like, if I was in the driver's seat of this, like, what would I try out? What would I go do? You know, like, what limits would I push with it? So, you know, the ability to climb, the ability to you know, strength-wise, what could I do? And then, you know, the water breathing thing I felt was important as well. Because I really wanted to get into the mechanics of what the creature is and how much of the physics of our bodies are different between what, you know, how we need to breathe air and this thing does not. And it's something I want to get to slowly as the characters kind of learn these things themselves. Without spoiling too much of 3, you get some more of that and some more explanation into the connection between Doug and the creature.
Yeah, I definitely got that sense reading it. I feel like this was like the lesson issue, really, where you really get to learn more about what's really going on. I think you played that really well, and actually it comes across really naturally. I like how you did it with how you were exploring what you could do and everything. That was really cool. So Scott. We've talked a bit before, outside of this, obviously, about how I like things gory. And, well, you're a bit tamer than I am in that department. I just have to compliment your artist on the crime scenes in Wrath number 3. The blood looked awesome on page 13. I love that shot where the whole panel had a red tone in it on page 4. The use of color really conveyed that terrible violence and brutality had been committed. And with the contrast between the black and white and the intense red of those pages, was that an effect you worked out with Emmy Latrera? Or was that just brilliant art and coloring on his part?
A lot of that is like brilliant art and coloring on his part and him willing to share his ideas. And it even goes back to chapter 1 where we had that blue filter that we put on the flashback scenes too. That was all him just saying, hey, what if I did this? And then I'm like, okay, let me see what that looks like. And then he'll give me an example. And I'm like, that's exactly what I want. Perfect. Thank you. Do that. Keep doing that. So yeah, a lot of Emilio gets put into this comic as well.
That's really great. Now we see the mythology of Wrath expand a bit in issue 3 as we see more from the world. The issue suggests that Doug has only seen a glimpse into a much larger world and that there's much more to it than what we've seen so far. I feel like this is a setting that's at least to some extent based on Japanese mythology, even though it's kind of more into the astral projection angle. And I feel like we're learning about it through Doug's eyes. Are there plans to show more of this kind of mythology in future issues, like maybe different kinds of magical creatures, monsters, or anything else?
At this time, no. The story is focused on Doug and this ability to create these creatures. They do get named in Chapter 3. And we'll see that going forward, but I kind of want that to just kind of come out for the readers organically.
And that makes sense.
So, but yeah, it is sticking to just these creatures.
Yeah, and Scott and I have kind of talked a little bit about, you know, like, plans beyond Wrath, and we're not opposed to, you know, expanding this world a bit more, but for now we just want to focus on, you know, the six chapters that we have planned for this story. And, you know, if once we get to that point, if we feel like we want to keep going with this story or if we want to start exploring something else, you know, we'll kind of do that and think about that when we come to it. But in the meantime, we're just sort of wanting to focus and make sure that this story feels really fleshed out and in that way.
It does, actually. One of the things I'm most impressed with the series is just how natural it all feels. I mean, nothing feels like an info dump. There isn't any bits where it feels choppy at all. Like you mentioned, writing it like a screenplay, it really reads like a movie, and I really appreciated that about that. This next question, and this is kind of switching gears a little bit, is for Drew. And you'll have to pardon my ignorance on this subject, but I'm wondering about 2D art specifically. I'm no expert, but I'm inferring from the name that 2D art has the first two dimensions in it, length and width, but not the third dimension, depth. Like, I noticed that the creature in Wrath seems to look like that. But I was hoping you could elaborate on that a little bit. Not just what it is, but why you chose 2D over 3D.
So I went to school specifically to learn game design and animation, and the school I went to let you choose a concentration. So I went for the art concentration, but and I've definitely done some 3D stuff, but I just found myself most drawn to 2D, both for static images like comics or illustrations, and also with 2D animation. This is to throw absolutely zero shade to 3D animation and 3D art. I think it's amazing, but for me, I was always really drawn to the kind of boundary of reality that you could push with 2D art. Because it's an image that you don't have to be able to walk around and look at it from a different angle, you can really kind of push the boundaries and bend the rules a little bit with 2D art in a way that is a lot harder to do, or you just simply can't do with 3D art. So that was what kind of drew me to it. So I always kind of like the way that you can make something that's in 2D and still have it be believable, but it doesn't have to follow every single rule of reality.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So, I mean, like, I noticed looking on your website that there does seem to be, you do seem to do some 3D art. But if I'm understanding you correctly, the difference is really about the shading and perspective that is added, rather than, because like I noticed even in some of the 2D art, the shading really seems to be what's missing. There does seem to be like an angle that implies some kind of a depth there. Am I misunderstanding?
I guess it's, for me, it's like when I think of 2D, it can be anything that's from something that's really graphic and cell shaded, like you'd picture like most comics, or even like, some animation is pretty graphic too. It's still 2D art if it's super rendered and kind of gives the illusion of 3D. I don't actually do any like 3D modeling or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I've played around with it, especially as a tool for setting up compositions and things like that, just to kind of do the work for me. The way that some artists call it, it's like gray boxing, make a bunch of cubes in something like Blender and, place where things are going to be in the scene, and then orient the camera where you want it, and then you don't have to kind of figure out the perspective. It's already done for you. All of the art that I do is hand-painted, hand-drawn. I use an iPad for most of all my stuff. So for me, the 2D isn't necessarily about the stylization, but it's just the medium. Like, everything is painted on a flat canvas.
That actually makes sense to me. I've done a little bit of work in 3D, and I can definitely appreciate the difference. So that's really interesting. Now, I've noticed, Drew, that you've seemed interested in working with animals, both on Wrath and with your other art projects. And I think that this comes off especially with the Rage Puppy character, But in looking through your website, I've also seen some really, really nice horse drawings. Are animals something that you have an outside interest in, or are they just something you enjoy drawing? Also, do you do any visual referencing when drawing animals? And is that a different process from drawing more humanoid characters?
I don't necessarily think I have any sort of interest in animals over something else. I'd actually say probably my biggest interest is environments. I absolutely love like world building and environment building. I don't have as much of that in my portfolio because it's a little bit less, easy to show off. The horses I do just as a weekly studying thing. I do use reference for that. A lot of those are directly referenced from like photographs, and I've been for more of my recent ones I've been doing a lot of kind of like mix and matching, like pulling a mood board almost, so having a reference of the horse itself and then pulling in like, oh, what if it was lava, so I pull in some photographs of lava and volcanoes, and then I mash it all together into the final thing. That's actually a thing I do. I'm part of an artist community, and every Monday we do an hour of just studying. And so the purpose is to, learn whatever you want, sort of in the same way that people do figure drawing. Horses are a lot less offensive to share than nude models in terms of social media algorithms. So
I could totally understand that.
So we do that in the same way that people though would do a figure drawing study. It was just horses are super complex, weird animals. We're like, why not do that? I definitely like creature design. It is a challenging thing, and so I almost always am using reference. The Rage Puppy's original form was really heavily referenced from like wolves and other kind of like more big canine wild animals. Though when I did the design, I did want it to kind of have a sense of humanness to it, that it was like this wasn't animalistic, but it wasn't, the anatomy of it wasn't fully animal. I wanted, especially its front legs have almost kind of hand-like paws that aren't, they have a thumb sort of, and the structure of the arm is a little bit more arm-like than, the front legs of an animal is, whereas the back is still pretty heavily referenced from an animal. So kind of having bits of this humanity kind of pushing out of it in that first incarnation, and then when you get to chapter two and he's able to make it not look like a rage puppy, it's still got some animalistic bits to it. The feet are not fully human, they've got kind of more clawed digigrade style to it, but you've got the kind of ears that aren't fully human, but it's kind of implying that this creature, the more control that Doug has over it, the more human it is. And the less control he has over it, the more like that kind of animalistic side is shown.
You can definitely see that in there too. I mean, there's that savage nature and the look of it, and it definitely becomes more human as he gets control. That was visually conveyed really, really well. I have a few final questions for you. I want to know what your plans are as far as publishing Wrath goes. You said that it's on Global Comics, obviously. It'll be going on the Wicked Store. Do you have any plans of maybe putting it on KDP or some other kind of digital site?
For right now, it was on Comixology. As well, I don't know how well Wicked has switched that over now that Amazon's kind of changed how they've done things over on that end. But we'll go through there. Global Comics is something that is newer, and it formats really well. It's really easy for me to do. I don't have to, you know, like tap Drew on the shoulder, like, can you help me with this? Which I often do, and I feel I do too much. But it's also really cool as well because it's a little bit smaller, and I can, given the opportunity, interact more with the readers, which I think is cool. But yeah, for now, it's basically going to be those three, and we are published and under contract with Wicked through Chapter 6.
All right, that's awesome. Do we know? Have you heard anything from Wicked about when people can pick it up there?
Which one, Chapter 3?
Yeah.
That's actually at our discretion, especially when it comes to crowdfunders. You know, our motto is always backers first. So once we've gotten it shipped out and in our backers' hands, and, you know, we're sure that everyone's got it and had ample time to go through it, then we'd start looking at giving permission to put it up on the Wicked store, and then eventually putting the digital up on Global Comics. And then I have to have that tough decision. Do I put it for free? Do I put it behind their paywall? You know, and that's all things that I've got to kind of roll with as they come along.
All right. I guess
I will say, just to kind of piggyback off of that, once all six chapters are done, and the kind of first story that we've got is wrapped up, we are definitely interested in getting it into more of a, you know, not just trade paperback, but more of a, like, could be sold in bookstores format. Obviously, that's still a bit of a ways off, as we're only about halfway through those six chapters, but it is something that we are keeping in mind for the future, that, you know, once the story is complete, making it available as a full thing.
That would be awesome.
That is something I always forget about. That is my ultimate original goal, is to have that, you know, like 200-ish page, you know, trade paperback. And I've just gotten caught up in the, you know, eat the elephant scenario of one chapter at a time, you know, as we grow our audience and kind of break it down so it's manageable for, you know, no-name creators like ourselves, that, you know, we can't just throw something out there and get 10 to 20 grand on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. So I got a little question about the trade. I personally don't actually collect individual issues, but I tend to collect trades. Most of the trades that I read are right around 6 to 7 issues. Is that why you chose 6 issues specifically?
I was designing it with that in mind, but I just how it broke down with in my outline, you know, start to finish what I wanted to cover, it just kind of broke down into 6 chapters.
Totally. Well, that actually about wraps up our interview with Scott Kish and Drew Smith there, unless there's anything we missed and either of you want to talk about before we close out.
I think you guys got us with a lot of really, really great questions. Were there any other questions you had about, you know, like what the creature does or anything that came up while you're reading, like, you know, where did you come up with that idea?
Well, I did actually, but it was about issue 3. I was curious. You kind of revealed what the creature is in issue 3 there, and I guess I was wondering, can you tell us anything about how you ultimately chose that without giving away too much?
The actual name of the creature?
Yeah, it clearly makes a reference to something, and I guess I'm curious if you chose it just because of that reference, or if there was something more concrete involved there.
It wasn't so much the reference. It was I was kind of throwing around some ideas with some other creator friends, and you know, we talk about, you know, like it, as it's referenced in chapter three is I wanted it to show like that dark reflection. And that's the name that someone kind of threw at me. And I was like, that's kind of cool. And I dug into it a little bit more and I just really felt it met the criteria I was looking for. Cause I was just originally like, spitball idea was calling it his wrath, but I'm like, that's too cliche and on the nose. Yeah. So when that came about, you know, just through a conversation with another creator, I'm like, I think that's more of what I'm looking for.
I got that sense definitely reading that. I would ask one other thing. Are we going to expect at any point to see what the story is behind Doug's real father? Because I feel like there's a connection there.
That's a tricky question to answer. Because
Whatever you can say.
Yeah. So here's how it plays out in my head. Is I have these six planned out. Whether we continue from there or not is going to, you know, kind of sit with how do I feel about the process? Is it doing well? Are we getting that following we need to go on? So I don't know for sure if we're going to get more after chapter six. Now, what I have playing out in my head, if we do continue, yes, there is going to be some digging into Doug's past. There is going to go into his basically his family tree specifically, not only his father, but his grandfather. Where some of this comes from, what other abilities they can do with these things. What else can I tell you without telling you too much? This wasn't the first time that the Rage Puppy came out. And what that was. A lot of ideas still bounce around in my head, not fully formed.
Yeah, and from what Scott and I have talked about, you know, and kind of how things are going to move forward, you know, if we think it's going to be a viable, you know, thing that we can do to continue this story, then, you know, this story is very much about Doug and about this kind of inciting situation he finds himself in. It's sort of setting the stage, but we do have ideas about the world and about the background. And, you know, there's characters that, you know, we're only on chapter three. There's characters you haven't met yet. And, you know, you'll get introduced to them by chapter six. But whether or not you're going to learn more about them and learn kind of how things are interconnected and related, that's just sort of something that we're waiting to see if we're going to have the, you know, resources to explore. So you're going to get a taste of everything with this first six chapters. And if we go from further, we're definitely going to dig deeper after that. Sort of setting the stage for that at first, and then we'll move from there if we can.
Oh man, I was already kind of hating the idea that this series was going to end after six issues, but if my input means anything, you guys definitely need to continue after six. This just sounds really intriguing. I really want to find out more about this world and these characters. I'm just really impressed with the series, and this is one I think I could see myself reading for quite a while.
Well, we're definitely not short on, you know, ideas and how things can go, but this is something both Scott and I do, like, outside of our, you know, normal full-time jobs and responsibilities. Right. So, you know, if we were able to get a little bit more in the way of resources, like, we definitely don't want to stop if we don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the key word is resources, and I think one of the big things that kind of slowed us down or kind of put a wrench in it is just the pandemic. And you know, we've soldiered on, but as I kind of put it to another creator, it feels like we're like running through mud as far as, you know, like getting out there and crowdfunding and generating the resources.
Yeah, because I think we were even talking about, you know, maybe going to some conventions and or having tables or something like that. And then, of course, that wasn't a thing we could do anymore. So, you know, I'm up in Seattle and Scott's in California. So we were actually talking, like, Emerald City Comic Con is going on right now. And we were talking about getting a booth or there one year. And because we started this back in early 2019, and our first sort of chapter came into fruition towards the end, early 2020. So, yeah, it was sort of a little bit of a roadblock, a little bit. We were talking about, you know, like finally getting to meet each other in person and, you know, being able to sign books and maybe get our names out there and get our physical copies in the hands of, you know, people who don't know us or know of Wicked, and kind of expanding that circle. So hopefully, you know, in the future, we'll be able to do that. And maybe by the time, you know, we get the trade out, that will be a more, you know, being able to say, look, we have a full trade paperback of this story. It might be easier to pitch and maybe get some additional funding.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. We had something similar in mind, and the pandemic kind of threw a wrench in that. We were scheduled for several conventions. There's I believe three of them all together in 2020, and it just ended up falling apart with not being able to gather in groups and all of that. And it was very much like traveling through mud. I have to agree with you on that one. So I'm really glad that you two came on the show, and actually thank you for being our second and third guests. Why don't you tell folks where they can find you and your work online?
Sure, you can. I'm mostly on Twitter, but you can follow me. My handle is at Kishkumen, KYSHKUMEN. I do a lot of my posting and updating on Wrath there. I do also have an Instagram, which is Wrath Graphic Novel. And then, of course, you can always go to wickedpublishing.net and pick up digital and physical copies of Chapter 1 and 2 of Wrath.
Yeah.
How about you, Drew?
You can find me. I am most active on Twitter, but that's not to say I'm super active on Twitter. I'm definitely one of the kind of more lurky type of people out there. But you can find me online at Drewzell, DREWZELLE. On Twitter, there's an underscore at the end because just at Drewzell is taken by a dead account. So Drewzell underscore on Twitter. And then I've got accounts a variety of other places like ArtStation, DeviantArt, Tumblr, stuff like that. But Twitter's basically the best place to find me. And I'm pretty sure my Twitter has a link to like my link tree that's got all the other affiliate links on there.
And don't forget to tell them about the website that they were referencing too.
Oh yeah, drewzell.com. So that's where you can find just kind of a smattering of my art that I've done. And also there is a page dedicated to Wrath on there if you're kind of interested in seeing some of the concept art and other stuff that I've done for Wrath behind the scenes.
Well, thank you both for joining us. And I really hope you manage to get all of your stories as funded as you would like, because I'm really looking forward to this. Wrath has been a really great read, and I'm really hoping that more people will be able to experience it the way we have. Anyway, we've enjoyed having you, and we look forward to seeing where Wrath goes from here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much, and thanks for, you know, all the kind words and feedback you gave us.
All right. If you'd like to be a guest on our Creator Spotlight, feel free to contact us via DM on Twitter at Omen Revelations or through email at omenrevelationspodcast@gmail.com. And we'll see you next month for our third Creator Spotlight. I hope you've had fun hanging out with us today on ORP. I know that Steve and I have had fun making this episode. If you've had fun too, we invite you to share this episode and help us get the word out.
For our Spotify listeners, we ask you to please rate our show as well. That can really help to grow our audience. But to all our listeners everywhere, we want to say thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.